Welcome to the podcast Як ти? Ukraine Life. Як ти? Means how are you in Ukrainian. I am your host, Lucia Cirki, a former correspondent, now a book author and a freelancer. Today, I'm joined by extraordinary guest Nicoleta Stoyanova. Nicoleta Stoyanova was born in 2002. She's a Ukrainian documentary photographer, fixer, and video journalist. Originally from Odessa, she moved to Kyiv, to Kharkiv, to be closer to the front line, not out of impulse, but for a deep sense of responsibility and urgency to witness and tell. Her work focuses on quiet human moments that unfold amidst violence and uncertainty, a touch between soldiers, a child playing near the dead, smoke in the sky above a summer beach. She believes in peace is not just the absence of war, but the presence of life that persists through it. Her photographs have been published in The Guardian, GQ, Bloomberg, Getty Images and others. In 2023, she was awarded the Ian Parry Grant, one of the most respected awards for emerging documentary photographers, until the age 24. Welcome to the podcast, Nicoleta. Thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's really important for me to receive your message with invitation to this podcast. And thank you for your work, for everything that you're doing and talking about Ukraine. It's really important, especially right now, how hard it's getting right now.
As always, I start this podcast with the question, Як ти зараз? How are you right now?
I guess we need to be really clear with everything, and we need to realize that we're really tired. We need to understand that all of us, Ukrainians, and especially I am, we're not okay, for sure, because it's almost the fourth year of war, a full-scale invasion, and it's getting exhausting in many senses, especially right now, like, exactly a week ago, I received the devastating news that one of my close friends, Christopher Garrett, who used to be a British deminer and veteran, he died because of during his job with demining, the mine killed him and another our friend. And it's really hard to realize when you spend so many time with person, especially when you're planning to do something together, because we're planning to spend this week together, training militaries. I was supposed to be translator for them. I was creating a huge kind of article about him and his work for the one of the foundation to support him, but we lost him, and it's hard. It's hard to have the loss of friends. It's hard to live nowadays. It's hard to hear the news about ceasefire, but ceasefire does not exist, unfortunately. I guess it was 4 or 5 sirens or alarms today. It's already a lot, so yeah. It's kind of hard. But we are trying to stay strong, of course.
Thank you so much for being so open to us on the podcast. My deepest condolences, Nicoleta. I can't imagine how you are feeling, you know, after losing such a close person. I remember that I heard in Ukraine people saying to me that the war takes like the kindest and the best people. How would you describe your friend Christopher Garrett to someone who did not know him?
Like, Christopher was the man with, as we said, was big soul. And he was always feels like he have energy for everything. He have energy for texting you, your friends, his family, his wife, his relatives, anytime. Doesn't matter how he feel himself. He always have energy for work. He always have energy for invite you for a wine or for a dinner or for everything. We like really remember him as the guy who's like, hey, hello, let's come there, let's do this. It's like, it's really hard to lose such people. And especially when you know that this is such a kind of professional and he's doing demining for already 10 years and he was killed because exactly of mine, and that was really like hard to believe. It's still hard to believe that this is happening. Yeah, it's like, it's crazy.
You just mentioned that you actually planned to be with him like on the day that he got tragically killed in eastern Ukraine while demining a place close to Izium, if I'm not mistaken. But your plans did change and you did not spend like the day with him. Like, being confronted with death at your age so regularly, how did that change you personally? You know, like, that death is so close to you so many times. How did that change you personally?
It's a really hard question. When the full-scale invasion starts, many of us stop to believe in the God, because many of us saying if the God will exist, he will never let all these things happen. But sometimes when things like that changing like a butterfly effect, and you realize that you can be in a place in which you can also particularly die. You never know. You sometimes realize that some, I don't know, heavy big things sometimes exist, because it happened to me already, I guess, 3 times. Because one is happening in Kherson in 2022, that I used to be with Italian journalists filming evacuation of the civilians in Kherson. And this city was deoccupied after like occupation by Russia for almost half a year. And after that, after deoccupation, Russia was just in a 10 kilometers from this big city. And a lot of people, of course, need to evacuate themselves. So we were planned to film that. We see a lot of people who came to get, you know, this humanitarian help, like food, boxes with hygienic stuff, etc. So we get into the car, and one of our friends said, you know, I have a birthday. I'm like, so let's have a cake for you. Let's go and have a cake. So we left for 20 minutes. When we left the car to have a cake, we hear a huge and loud, like, shelling into the city. And we realized that all the loud sounds was in the way of this point when those volunteers used the base. A lot of people was killed. The place where our car should stay, there was a lot of kind of shrapnels. The grad hit this place, and unfortunately, volunteers with who we used to go to evacuation, he dead. He was just lying on the ground, and it was awful for us, for all of us. It was just paralyzed, sitting in the car and looking at everything what's going on. That was crazy for all of us, and that paralyzed us for a whole day, this realizing that we just left this place, and exactly this place was shelled a few minutes after. That was really crazy. Second situation also happened like in February this year. We went with Azov to the small city near Pokrovsk, which right now is the biggest frontline city where battlefields is going on. And we went with drone operators, and we stayed in a really small basement. I guess this is basement like my workplace. It's really small one. And there was 5 of us, and the oldest person was 23 years old. I was 22. The youngest guy was with 19. Another guy was 20 years old, and he already had a prosthesis on his leg. He already lost his leg before, and that was crazy. We were so young. And at one moment, we were just sitting, talking. I supposed to stay with them for one night and film there. And we hear a crazy bombing around, because we were sitting in the basement of the small house. And the roof of the small house started to fall down and get into the basement. And exactly at the time, guy from the drone was turning back and see how Russians is bomb all the houses nearby our place with aerial bombs. It was like 100 meter close to our house. And that was really crazy, because these few seconds between every bomb which fall near your place, it feels like a last one. It was really scary. Nothing is more scary than aerial bomb, because no one can survive. This is such a heavy thing that can kill everything and do the big hole. And we were just so lucky that all the things just fall like near and 100 meters. I guess it was 3 of them, and it was already so much. We were just like sitting. John was turning back and filming everything, all the explosions. And we were like truly shocked. And yeah, and the last thing that's happened like a week ago, when I supposed go with Chris to the trip in which he died. And I was really like busy with stuff. I was thinking that I need to end some things, apply for some grants, do some meetings in Kharkiv. And I was saying, guys, for sure we will spend next week together training soldiers. So let's give me just some space, please. And I'll do my stuff. And for sure I gotta easily do your work with you. And I was thinking like, for sure we will see each other, but we didn't, and it's crazy. So yeah, it's strange to live with this feeling when you can die in every moment. But unfortunately, this can happen not only in the front line. This can happen in every city of Ukraine. Unfortunately, Ukraine is a danger place right now because of Russian invasion. Unfortunately, there's no safe place, no safe place. It's Russian roulette.
But you say, I assume that you know people of your age who left Ukraine after the start of the full-scale invasion. Do you feel any difference between you and them due to the fact that you are living in such a different environment from them?
Of course, this is the difference between people my age who facing the war, who facing the real front line, and people who isn't, who live abroad. But I cannot say that they are not right in their decision. This is really okay to want to be safe. I guess I also would love to be outside the country if I'm not doing my work, or if I understand that I cannot do my job properly, if I cannot do the picture which can help many people. And I cannot say that I'm angry at them. I feel that they're doing their best, some of them staying abroad and helping Ukraine. But at the same time, the problem that there's a big gap between us, even between people who just live in Kyiv, who never went to the front line, who just try to live their normal life, and between people who face in the front line or every month or every week or whatever, and some of people getting or mad at those people who didn't face the war or getting sad or whatever. But it's this huge gap. Even when you try to talk, it feels like you're having the same country, the same language, the same culture, but you do not understand each other fully, because some of the people cannot realize the whole face of war, unfortunately, and they sometimes do not understand what you truly used to face for. Like, when I used to live in Kyiv, in the capital, and that's the reason why I left Kyiv and changed to Kharkiv, because every my trip, which I spent in Donbas for a week or two, when I was turning back home, I cannot get out from my apartment, I guess, for a few days and go to the cafe, see my friends, do just normal stuff. I cannot, because I see that people having like matcha in cafeteria on coconut milk, I don't know, and talking about some business trips to Italy. And you're like, you just turn back from the front line when people are living in the trenches and eating kind of from the cans, and you see everything that's going on in Kyiv and try to compare in your head everything what you saw there. You start to be like in a broken matrix. It's strange that this is one country sometimes. It's a really hard feeling to realize that such a different things can be combined into one place, into one country. So yeah, sometimes it's really hard. I'm not getting angry at people, I just getting sometimes disappointed by everything that's going on.
When the war started in 2014, the war against Ukraine, you were about 12 years old. How is it for you personally to have lived in a country torn by war for half of your life? Do you have the impression that your youth was stolen from you?
It's a really good question, but I think more, yes, stolen than not stolen, because for sure, even like we call this war on the East, when it was from 2014 till 2022, I was planned like travel around the world, doing a lot of things, doing fashion photography, etc. I was not planned to become a photojournalist or war photographer. And East, it's also, for me, it's a small motherland, because one of my grandmother, she's from Donetsk, which right now is occupied. And when I was a small child, I used to go with her every summer to the Donetsk, to the Lugansk, where her sister used to live. So that was really strange to me when I was like 11 years old, 12. And I see a lot of protests in Odessa. We got the crazy protest on the 2nd of May in 2014. When I see how people were shooting from the balcony, and mom was calling me, get out of the balcony to not be injured. And I remember this strange activities which was going on, but I did not understand fully what's going on. And after, I was asking my grandmother, are we going to the Donetsk? She's like, no, unfortunately not, because war starts. And I'm like, war? There's no war around. How does it happen? But after, that was feeling that a lot of Ukrainians forget about that, kind of, because it was not many information in the news, nothing in general. Maybe I do not remember, maybe I was not so interested. But till the age of 18, I used to fully live the kind of normal life. I was planning to plan what I want to do in a fashion and travel and everything. When we realized that something goes wrong, even already in November 2021, we see that a lot of troops in the border, we see that a lot of trainings in the sea. We already see that something wrong, and I started preparing myself mentally. Okay, what should I do if the Polish invasion will start? Are we gonna go? Are we gonna fight? Or what? Of course, parents do not give me possibility to fight because I only turned 19. But yeah, I get my camera in the hand and start shoot. That's what I can do.
You said that you always had photography in your life, and at the age of 17 you started studying journalism in your hometown in Odessa, and there they taught you photojournalism, and then you realized that this is what you wanted to do, photography. What would you say, talking about your work you do now, what is it about photography that is so fascinating to you?
Photography for me, it's a little bit deeper thing, I guess, because this was with me since my childhood. Even right now, I'm sitting with you in my workplace, in my cabinet, and here in my pin desk, I've got the pinned picture of my great-grandfather, who used to be from Donetsk, actually. And here is he in a military uniform, because he used to fight during World War II. But when everything is ended up, he started to work in mines, and also do a lot of pictures, do photography. That's why my grandmother have, I guess, 15 kilos printed pictures by him, because he have his own place for creating pictures, he said. And before his death, my grandmother moved to Odessa, and she also moved with her a lot of pictures of him, but I never saw him in my life. He died like a few years before my born. And I was growing up seeing a lot of pictures taken by him. That's why my grandmother was taking a lot of pictures by me. She had a few cameras because that was her father, actually. And I was growing up with pictures. I was growing up by albums. I always like to have a look at them. Maybe because of that, I think I started to do the pictures. Maybe because of that. And when the full-scale invasion starts, I realized that in the memory kind of also of my grandmother, of great-grandfather, of my roots, I really want to do the pictures of my small motherland, which getting destroyed day by day more and more, and occupied more and more, as we see right now in Pokrovsk and Konstantinivka way. Because I remember those places as a joy. I remember those places as relatives, as family, as best time in my childhood, because I really was loving those trips so much. And this turned into kind of nightmare when you can left your life there in the ground. And I guess that's why I started to do those pictures in the front line. Because I truly want to do this in the memory of my grandparents, I guess, who was from there. Just kind of fight for my land through the lenses. I understand that I cannot fight. I cannot just mentally. But I really try to film the truth about everything that's going on.
You often photograph like contradictions, joy and grief, love and death, and absurdity and tenderness. Why is it important for you to show these contrasts with your work?
Because actually life still exists. Even during the craziest times, even sitting in a shelter with soldiers or in the trenches, you always can hear some kind of jokes, stupid jokes from them. They always have a Starlink. They can have a look some kind of memes, showing you funny videos, try and cheer you up, offer you some tea, some sweets. I never see any dog out without any sweets or tea. They're always so like hostile. Soldiers is really, really great guys and men and girls and women. And I really happy that during this crazy and dark times and world gets around crazy, they can find a moment for just a normal life. It's really hard, but people are really trying. Like, I was filming the exhumation of the Ukrainian and Russian bodies, where the volunteer group from the Slovyansk, which is Donetsk region, they go in by themselves to the front line, and the bodies of Ukrainian and Russian soldiers who was like killed like day ago, 2 weeks ago, whatever. And they're just doing exhumation with the idea to turn back the bodies to the home. And at one moment, I see that one woman, this girl, was coming to this field with exhumation. And girl was like kind of playing and running in the way of the main exhumator, Oleksiy, and she was like saying, "Dad, hello!" And she was really small, and she was running between all these bags with bodies and running to her father just to hug him. And I was like, what is Charles doing here, just genuinely? And I realized that that was wife of the main exhumator with his daughter, and they just came visit him at work and bring him some food, like tea, etc., just to cheer him up. And I was kind of shocked looking all these bags with bodies, bones, really in a bad condition. And I like, and this girl was just running around, giving me flowers, and I'm like, what's going on? It was really a strange moment for me, that when the childhood, this pure best time of your life, faces the war, and it's really crazy combination sometimes. When I used to film how people chilling on the beach in Kharkiv, on the lake, and in one moment, all of us hear the like loud kaboom, and we see the big amount of the smoke in the sky, and people was just again chilling and looking at the smoke, just like, okay, let's swim again. Yeah, life is going on sometimes, and unfortunately, some of the people can feel this, can lose this feeling of the danger around. They do not feel in danger anymore, or they are facing those sirens so much that they do not realize which sirens is dangerous or not. Like right now, we got 5 sirens today, or 4. I even do not remember. It was many of them. And every time it's different, or it's like aerial bombs flying around, or Shahids, or another things. And you're like just, oh my God, I have no, like so many time, like going to the shelter. We got air alarms for 18 hours per day, kind of. So it's really a lot. You can spend all the time in a basement, unfortunately. So yeah, it's a strange life here.
You talked about your great-grandfather, who was a photographer as well. The places he lived, you cannot visit anymore because they're occupied by Russian forces. How is that for you, traveling to places like you mentioned Pokrovsk, a city which is, you know, under heavy fire by the Russian army and the Ukrainian army tries to defend it? When you travel there, do you think about that it might be the last time you see the city and the last time you take pictures of that city? Do things like this come up to your mind when you're traveling there?
Yeah, sometimes that's really happened to me, and it's hard to realize because Pokrovsk as a city used to feel much more safer than Kramatorsk, for example, which is also second large city in the Donetsk region, which is in our territory. But right now we realize that Pokrovsk looking really crazy. Like one of my friends was there with volunteers, and I see all these burnout buildings, all these empty streets, all the graves in the yards between high buildings, because people just cannot bury themselves, cannot have a funeral because it's too dangerous. The drones is flying around, and you see these pictures of the graves just in the yards, and it's really awful because you never think that this can happen. You're always feeling that this gotta be alright. But we need to be realistic and understand that already a lot of soldiers is in trenches in Dnipropetrovsk region, because occupation step by step like a cancer eating your territory, and this is really sad, unfortunately.
What would you wish that people would understand about life in Ukraine during wartime, even now when there is, you know, so much talk about a possible ceasefire or no ceasefire, or maybe a meeting or no meeting and all these diplomatic talks? What would you like people to understand about life in Ukraine at the moment?
As long as global countries and in general world is waiting, as fast they losing the people who can protect their countries. They need to realize that if they gotta wait too long with decision to give us weapons or etc., sooner or earlier we will have no people who can protect this country. Even right now, Ukraine, this is the first country in the world with the biggest amount of the women in the army. It's already more than 100,000 or something like that women in the army, and it's really a lot. It's like every 10 person in the Ukrainian army, this is women. And we need to realize that we're losing our nation, our territory. And I really do not believe that Russia will stop if they will occupy Ukraine, for example, because they already occupied a bit of Georgia, they already occupied a bit of Moldova, which is neighbor of the Romania. They already plan to do some stuff with Kaliningrad, which is also in a border with Poland, and it's... I guess I really would love people to understand that we're like losing the best people who is really ready to protect this country, who is really ready by all the costs, not money, not everything, just because they are Ukrainians, to protect this land and protect the European Union and other countries. Because if they are not, if we lose most of them, or even the guys who was like Chris Garrett from the abroad, if we lose a lot of people like that, we will have no people who gotta protect us, unfortunately.
If I understand you correctly, you also have a little brother who is younger than you are, right? When you talk with him, are you sometimes afraid that he might at some point will serve in the army or go to the front lines as a soldier? Are you thinking about that, and how is that for you?
This is actually the crazy truth about Ukraine, that you cannot leave the country after 18 years old. And even it's sometimes problems when you're already 17, you can leave the country if you're not kind of registered in the army or something like that. So my brother was 15 years old when Polish invasion starts, and he already realized for himself as a teenager that he didn't want to face the war and he didn't want to go to the front line by any cost. He's really afraid. He was afraid as a teenager, and I can't realize that at 15 you're really afraid of the war. As the person, and he also, who have roots from Bulgaria, he decided to study Bulgarian language. He studied really a lot. And exactly a year ago, he left the country at 16 years old to study abroad because he really was scared to not leave the country or die at the front or whatever. And of course, mother support him in this decision. And I already didn't see him almost a year. I didn't visit Bulgaria, I plan to, because he's got to turn 18. He was turned 17 in Bulgaria, and he's got to turn 18 soon, and it's crazy. So, yeah, he doesn't want to plan right now, turn back, because he's thinking that he cannot leave the country anymore. So he planned to stay abroad as long as he didn't get U.S. Citizenship. And the problem is that he also cannot see the father, and father also cannot visit him because father also cannot leave the country. So it's a problem for many people, unfortunately, right now. For many families who is separated by those rules and by the war and by Russian invasion.
Could you have ever imagined that you will live during your lifetime, you know, in a situation where it actually matters whether you are a woman or a man, whether you can cross a border or whether you can, you know, see your father, visit your father, be with your father or not? Like, could you have ever imagined that you would be in such a situation?
Of course not. Of course not. I even cannot imagine myself living in a kind of frontline city, 30 kilometers to Russia and doing my job. I even cannot imagine that I can do this. I never cannot imagine. Everything what I'm experiencing, I'm sometimes looking at my gallery on the phone, or sometimes I uploading hard drive and my laptop, and I'm looking at pictures like, did I really do this picture? Did I really used to do this picture? Sometimes you even have no time to process everything that's happened with you, because so many things has happened. And sometimes you're trying to do the reflection, but it's really hard because every day, every month, something happened, and it's really emotionally hard sometimes. But that's why I feel myself already, to be honest, like 35 years old, not 22 mentally, after facing a lot of madness and a lot of crazy decisions, you realize that that was pretty hard years.
How do you, in your real life, how do you realize that you have grown up so fast, that you are mentally not 22 years, but 35 years old? How do you, you know, feel that in your life?
You're starting feeling that you're growing up too fast when you're facing things which no one used to prepare you. And of course, it wasn't impossible to prepare to the full-scale invasion. And no one was preparing me to go to the front line. It was my own decision. And when you're facing all these, like, things when you're working. For example, I used to work as a producer for international media, and you're the kind of leader in a group of like 40-year-old men who is with you. And it's really hard sometimes, and you started things as a with the whole responsibility as you can to protect your team, to organize your work, to explain and help explain to people what's going on in Ukraine. And after that, of course, you're growing up faster, as you can realize. Because, of course, I would love to do partying. I would love to travel around the world. But I'm really not sure if I gotta be like that right now, if I was just having the normal life. Not so serious, to be honest. Yeah, but you really start to realize how serious sometimes your decisions and your pictures and your actions can be for.
You just mentioned that the decision to go to the front line was your own decision. Not everyone was supportive of your decision to go to the front line. So you worked, when the full-scale invasion started, you worked at Suspilne, which is the public broadcaster of Ukraine. You worked there at the local branch in Odessa, and they were not really supporting of you sending you as a photojournalist to the front line. Can you describe what has happened and why you made the decision nevertheless to go to the front line?
Yeah, I used to work in Suspilne in Odessa as a photojournalist. And for first half of year of the 2022, I used to film all the consequences after a missile strike in the city and region. When you come into the place and you see all this destruction after the Russian missile. And of course, I realized that I really wanted the moment to film more, to explain more. I have like maybe something to say. And maybe it was kind of, you know, this use maximalism, I don't know. At the time, I was really like fully mentally and morally prepared going to the front line. I really want to. And at the time, even Nikolaev region, which is neighbor region to the Odessa, was the front line. Because Kherson and Kherson region wasn't deoccupied. So the guy who was 20 years old from the team of Suspilne, he was allowed to go to the front line. But I'm not, as the only one photographer for the whole studio. I'm like, why not? And editor said to me, I don't wanna soldiers think how to save your life, not how to do the war, or just ask permission of your parents. Or something like that. I'm like, what? I'm 19 years old. I can do this. I really can. I'm adult. And no one believed me. No one trusts me. Of course, the girl who's 19 years old and have no any experience in the war, of course, they do not trust me. And when I try to apply for any job, for any media who was looking for a correspondent, they were saying, no way, just no way. Sorry, but you're too young. I'm like, okay. So I just quit the job in Suspilne. I moved to Kyiv and I started to do the producer job for international media. And this has actually happened randomly. And that's what impressed me in the European people, that they do not look at your CV usually at the time. They do not ask your graduation. It doesn't many matter for them your age. They was really looking at your passion for work. And for them, it was enough at the time. Maybe because it was not enough people who can do producing stuff and etc. So that's how I went to the deoccupied region of Kherson. And I just started with translation, turned into the work in communication with soldiers and helping journalists come to the places. And after I realized that I can do more than just producing, I started ask the TVs and journalists who I used to work, can I do just the pictures while working in studio? Like, yeah, of course. And after they're like, can I have a look what you did? And they're like, wow, good picture. And that's how I get the portfolio in general. So yeah, that was strange experience. But step by step, I start to have a look how the really professional used to work. And I start to have a look and do the same as they did before.
You mentioned that your mother was supportive of your brother's decision to leave the country. You're a grown-up person, so you can make decision for yourself. But how did your family react when they heard for the first time that you were actually going to Kherson and other frontline regions? What was the reaction of the people in your family?
I guess everything again happened also step by step for them, because of course, mother was every time worrying about me and place where I come into the missile strike. But when I explained to her that it's okay, there is no Russian, that there's no fire, it's kind of fine zone, it's far away from the front line, she was like, all right, just text me. All right, just text me. And I was like texting to her, like, I'm going, I'm coming back. Maybe I'll have no connection or etc. So I tried to explain her everything and send her pictures. Of course, sometimes when I started go a lot to the Donbas and etc., I didn't say to her about some stuff and it was going over to the zero line or sometimes just to not make her stressed out so much. Sometimes I was saying that I was somewhere already like months later, just like, okay, I'm here, I'm next to you sitting, I'm alive, I have hands, legs, everything, but I was there. She's like, what? Yeah, and yeah.
From my own experience as a journalist, I had many people around me who were sometimes afraid that something might happen to me, family members or friends, they are much more afraid. I sometimes had like this impression for them, it's much more, you know, the feeling of danger is much more imminent and bigger to them than to me, who is actually there on the spot. Do you kind of have the same experience with your family members, your mother or friends of yours?
I guess even sometimes I have this experience when I was abroad. When you see some news about or missile strike in a city or etc., and it's automatically feels for you that it was missile strike on the whole city, not on a particular object somewhere far away. And it's your feels, Jesus, this is so bad. This is so bad that I'm abroad. I want to be there. And the same sometimes happen with mother. She's like right now in Odessa, and father too. And every time when she is waking up and seeing in the news, and during the night there was her missile strike or drones is flying, she's like, are you all right? Are the drones like was far away? Are you sure that it was far away? So of course I'm actually, she's worrying, but also I'm worrying too, because when like my parents working for government and they working in the center of Odessa, and when sometimes I see the reports from Odessa that missile strike has happened near the places, when I knew that my parents' work, of course I'm trying to call them immediately to understand if they're all right or not, because you never know what can happen, and it's really like bad feeling, especially with understanding, all right, now the sirens again starts.
Would you like to check whether kind of attack it is and whether you need to take?
Yeah, actually we got really proficient stuff in the Telegram channels and in general in the social media. Every time they write in what's going on, this is right now lightning on Dergachi. Lightning is the small variant of the Russian drone. It's a small drone with some kind of explosive, not FPV, something bigger, but this can fly 20 kilometers or 30 away, and it's going fast like lightning, so they call this like that. This, yeah. And right now it's going on the city. It's going on the Dergachi, on the city, and probably it usually hits Saltivka. So for now, it's okay.
You're not living in Saltivka?
No, I live in the other the center. Okay. And everything around, to be honest, is pretty bombed already. So I'm not sure that's something. Seriously. No, really, even I have few balconies, and every balcony have this wooden panel. And only like right now, after 3 years of this full-scale invasion, some people came and start to calculate everything just to check the windows. Because, yeah, like, I can see from the balcony totally destroyed building. And, yeah, this is everything in the center. So, yeah.
What would you say, how the war and, you know, your experience so close to the front line shape you as a person and as a photographer?
For sure. It sounds strange, but it grows me up, as we used to talk before. But at the same time, I'm not sure that I'm as happy as before after seeing a lot of things. I'm really scared to lose this light in the eyes, you know? When sometimes you're looking in the mirror and you realize that this is your best years of the life, it should be. And you already look so tired and you're not sure sometimes, are you doing this right? Are you wasting your young years or no? And yeah, it's just hard to realize if you need to do this, if you need to do this frontline and documentary photography, or it's better to leave. But all the time I'm staying here in the memory of or dead friends, or in the memory of family, or just because it's not so many people who can cover the war right now, unfortunately. And yeah, as photographer, of course, I realize how I grew up so fast in 4 years. But at the same time, I really would love to film some beauty. I really would love to film more good things. I never used to film weddings, for example. I used to film a lot of massacre, funeral, etc. But I never filmed a wedding. Even like half a year ago, first time in my life, I filmed the birth of the child in a Kharkiv hospital. And it was really beautiful. That was really beautiful when the mother having a child who was only newborn, her husband who is military, who didn't see her for a few months, is kissing her and its newborn child. It's really beautiful. It's really beautiful how life starts, not how it ends. That's why sometimes I offer my friends in Kharkiv to do some fashion photo session just to just to take stress off and doesn't feel that you're camera is a tense thing, because when you're already holding your camera, you realize that this is instrument with which you're doing important things. Because when your pictures start to be or important, or you start them doing just not for yourself, you start to do them for the world, you realize the weight of responsibility of the camera, and it doesn't feel like a joy anymore. It feels like a hard job. And when I see sometimes people with cameras in the park filming each other, smiling and playing on the camera, I'm like, I wish to do the same. I really wish to film like that one day. So yeah.
What gives you strength to carry on your difficult job?
I guess friends, parents, and in general understanding that already I give those 3 years, whole 3 years for such job, maybe not just for nothing. If, for example, I did this podcast with you, if I won some grants, if I already doing some stuff for Getty Images as for a biggest global photo bank, maybe I'm doing something right. And understanding sometimes that your picture is really important, I need to every time remember to myself about that, because I can struggle in sometimes, I cannot be ashamed of myself that I'm not enough or something like that. I'm just like looking at the past steps which I did, and I realized that I need to do more. I need to realize that there's so many people whose stories isn't told, whose stories you need to tell to the world. And I really want to explain every loss in the family, every separated family, every destruction, or every piece of joy during this war, because it's really important. It's truly how life goes on here. It's how we're living in this broken matrix. Like 2 weeks ago, the whole week was really crazy, especially during the night, because Russians were shelling the city with Shahids and ballistics. So we cannot sleep for a few hours per night. So you're waking up at 1 because of ballistic. You're falling asleep. You're waking up at 3 because Shahid is like, and you realize that it's somewhere here, and you're going to the bathroom and like Jesus. And you cannot sleep till the 5. And you're waking up so broken, but you see how people is like driving cool cars, going to have matcha in a coffee shop, walking their dogs, like, and life is going on, and you're like, oh, okay. Some friends invite you to the party on the Friday, and you're like, what the hell is part there? Like, rave. Again, raves. It's spring. I'm like, which raves? They're like, yeah, we have raves here. Come on. I'm like, okay. It's really crazy here. We can see our friends, soldiers already in uniform, having coffee in the morning, and they already like going to the front line. And in the evening, they already turn back for a cup of tea or whatever. Work day is ended up, so I did my stuff. I killed some Russians, as he say. I'm like, so yeah, it's crazy to live like that. It's so controversial. So controversial.
Thank you so much for being my guest today, Nicoleta Stoyanova. Thank you so much for sharing the stories of so many Ukrainians. I'm absolutely 100% sure that you're doing a very important job. And I'm very sure that whenever you take a picture of a wedding, that the couple you're taking a picture of can be very happy to have such a brilliant photographer who is taking the wedding pictures. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you so much, Lucy. Thank you for inviting, and thank you for supporting us. It's really important, really. Thank you for spending time with me, and let's tell the stories about Ukrainians together.
Let's do this, I think.
Warmest hugs to you, Lucien.